Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network, on theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. So today we have Skylar Thompson, who's coming in from Dayton, Ohio. She's a voluntarist, anarchist, unschooling mother of a five-year-old daughter, three-year-old son, and a three-month-old son. And she has a few Facebook groups that she runs with Benjamin Lucas. Called one is Strictly Voluntary, and then there's Unsocialized Autonomous Brats, awesome name, love it, and then there's Agorist Girl, which is her page. So we're going to talk a little bit about how she came to volunteerism and anarchy, as well as definitely peaceful parenting, because I love to focus on peaceful parenting, since that's my real approach with my kids. And I think I'm around a lot of parents, and so that's kind of my angle, like homeschooling and unschooling. So so that's my whole thing, my focus, I guess. And and then we'll talk a little bit about that, and what's the day-to-day problems that she encounters doing that, and how she solves it. So Skylar, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Hi.
Yeah, so I've been seeing you around with your pages and posting stuff and sharing, and liking some of my stuff, and it's really awesome. So I love to interview peaceful parenting people and unschoolers and homeschoolers, because I think so many people that I talk to about unschooling, say, the common questions, right? Like, what's a typical day, right? Do you have a curriculum, or what is your curriculum? What curriculum do you use? The stuff like that. Do you get questions like that?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, my kids are still pretty young, but my daughter has just started telling people that she's homeschooled, if they ask her.
My son says that too.
That's the question everybody has for my kids. Like, do you go to school yet?
And right.
My daughter finally, now she's like, we're homeschooled. But she'll say we're homeschooled.
Yeah.
And then, she's just started saying that she's homeschooled. And people really, we haven't had any negative like comments about it. People are usually like really excited about her being homeschooled. So,
yeah, the angle that I do it usually is, talk about, or say I'm an anarchist, or, or do anything like that. But a lot of times I get these issues or these concepts in like through the back door, like stealthily. I just talk to people, and then you have them feel relaxed. My thing is jokes. I used to do stand-up comedy, so I tell a lot of jokes, and I make people laugh. And then that lowers their barriers, makes them feel a little more comfortable, And then once I tell them, I'm an acupuncturist, herbalist, and I say, oh, I'm a homeschooling father. And so they're interested. They don't feel threatened or intimidated by me, and so, which is great, right? That's what you want.
Yeah.
So that's that's my thing, and then after that it's pretty smooth. It's just the questions phase, that we have to encounter. But so before we get into that, please get into your history and how you learned about volunteerism and anarchy.
Okay. Yeah. Around 2011, when my daughter was born, when she started eating food, I think was when I really started, because I was looking for like what the healthiest thing is for her, and I was trying to find healthy options for her, and I kind of came into this local co-op that we had, because I got into getting raw milk. And so we had to go through a herd share, because here in Ohio, you have to own part of the cow. You have to own the cow in order to get milk from the cow. So there's all this like red tape that you have to go through. But and then I started learning about Monsanto and all of that that's involved with that. And we did a march against Monsanto in 2011. And I think really what made me come to volunteerism and anarchism is just food in general. That was my start. There was, at the co-op, the owners, the man who owns the co-op, he was really into Alex Jones and InfoWars and stuff, so that was kind of like the beginning of my like journey to where I'm at today. And then once I started looking into just like Alex Jones and things of that nature, I was like, this is a little too much for me. So like, if I could find like what this is kind of part of, and then I found Justin Stout on Facebook, and he had his movement in Asheville, and that was kind of my start to learning about, like, peaceful parenting, and so I found, pretty much just Justin Stout and his movement that he had going on in Asheville, and I became friends with him, and yeah, that was pretty much the start of it, is food and food freedom and learning more about freedom and taking steps. It was just like a step-by-step process. So.
Any specific books or podcasts or YouTubers or personalities or anything like that?
Dana Martin. I like Dana Martin a lot. Yeah. Found her, and I started, because I didn't start out when I was a parent. I didn't start out as a peaceful parent. I was just listening to, like, family around me telling me that, like, you know, letting Bella, my daughter, cry it out was fine, and things like that. And it just didn't feel right. You know, it didn't feel right for me to, like, put her in a crib and leave her in a room to cry when, like, I felt like she needed me. And so I was searching for alternative options to what I was being told was okay to do, because it just didn't feel right what I was doing. Just because everybody else was doing it. And I've always been kind of rebellious and people telling me what I should do. So.
Yeah, that's... I went along a similar path because before we had kids, I remember talking to my wife and saying, you know, are we going to spank them? And we both looked at each other and like, yeah, I mean, we were spanked. Why not? Why wouldn't we? I mean, if they do something bad, you spank. But what's the problem with that? You know, so we just didn't think about it. And it's more like, you know, my parents did it, their parents did it, so why wouldn't we do it, right? You know.
Yeah.
And then you realize, and I was introduced to Stefan Molyneux video, like the 17 reasons why you shouldn't spank your children, and that was the first time I saw Stefan Molyneux video, and so that kind of got me introduced to peaceful parenting and then volunteerism and then all that other stuff, free markets, and so that was my in. But also, a similar thing with you is that I also was very interested in the nutrition aspect because I studied acupuncture and Chinese herbs and Eastern nutrition. So I did, you know, research heavily about vaccines, about GMOs, about, you know, holistic medicine, you know, all kinds of alternative therapies. You know, I was very much into that in Monsanto and all that. That was my angle. And also, the other thing that was kind of interesting was that a lot of the sites that I was following, they supported, like, banning GMOs, right? We should ban, we should appeal to the government to ban GMOs. And at the time, it seems like a good idea, right? Like, these are bad, right?
It didn't seem like a good idea at the time.
So you went through a similar thing?
Yeah, I was holding signs and saying we need to ban GMOs.
Oh, wow, see?
I've since changed my stance on that drastically, but I was a sign holder. I have, like, pictures from walking around Dayton doing March Against Monsanto, and...
So, when somebody asks you about GMOs right now, like, what's your approach? If they say, you know, this is a horrible thing, a scourge on humanity, what do you think we should do about it? What would you say to a person like that?
The stance I have now is just vote with your dollar. I mean, if you think that Monsanto shouldn't be a thing, then don't spend your money on it. And then it'll eventually, hopefully it'll become obsolete and we won't need it. People will, like, wake up and realize, you know, this is not good. But as far as banning everything, I mean, it's not going to do anything. Monsanto has so much money that it doesn't even matter. So, but people want to say that they have the right to know what's in their food, the right to, you know, a label saying that it has, even the labeling, I don't agree with labels being put on food to say that it's got GMOs in it, because, I mean, the only right you have is to grow your own food in your yard. So if you want to talk about rights, then...
Yeah, yeah.
On food, if you think you have the right to know what's in your food. So.
Yeah, one thing I really have come to realize, you know, studying Austrian economics and volunteerism, is the idea of negative rights, is that we don't have any positive rights, like, you know, right to money, right to house, right to food, right to health care, none of that. We don't have any of that, because all of that requires the labor of another person to give to you, right? And if you're saying that you have a right to someone's labor, then that is the essence of slavery. That is slavery, right? And so that's impossible. You know, how can you deserve the labor of someone else for free, right? It's completely ridiculous, you know. So the only rights that we truly have are those of negative rights, not being hindered to do what we want to do, you know, as long as it doesn't harm someone else, right? Or the right to homestead, or peacefully, have your own private property and things like that, and like you said, grow your own food. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that I wrote an article a couple months ago saying that how banning GMOs strengthens the state.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or banning anything, you know, just giving it's like giving more power to the politicians, saying like, if the corporations are the fiction of the state, the creation of the state, how is giving more power to the state to restrict it?
I completely agree on that.
And also the other way I look at it is like, it's easy to look at all these corporations, you know, Chase and Bank of America and Wells Fargo and DuPont and Syngenta and Monsanto and BP and all these corporations that so many people revile. And it's true, they have done some evil things for a lot of reasons. But they're not the root. They're the symptom of the problem.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like cutting off the branches of the tree, right? You know, so it's like or cutting off the head of the hydra, you know, it's just going to grow back, right? So you have to look, what is giving them power? What's giving them sovereign immunity and the corporate shield so that they can act recklessly, destroy, you know, the lives of millions of people, you know, destroy private property, you know, pollute oceans or whatever, and not suffer consequences that a normal business would suffer, right? That is a real problem.
Yeah, we got to strike at the root. You gotta get the roots up.
Exactly.
Get rid of it.
Exactly. So tell me a little bit more about your peaceful parenting style, or right after when you got to volunteerism, is that when you got introduced to peaceful parenting, around that same time?
Pretty much. Yeah, I think my daughter was around 18 months old when I really started grasping the concepts and like changing. There was an incident that I had with her. She was 18 months old, and she had done something, and it upset me really, really bad. And I was not a peaceful parent with her up until I started trying with her around 18 months old. So there was an incident that we had where I was really upset with her, and I yelled at her, and I probably patted her on the butt a couple times, and then she got really emotionally distraught, and she was standing at a baby gate, and I was standing in the kitchen, and she was just crying and screaming, and then she started smacking her butt, and she was like, bad, bad baby, bad, bad baby, and then it completely tore me apart. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I started crying, I grabbed her, I was hugging her and telling her I was sorry. So that was a really pivotal moment for me, was realizing what I was doing to her was making her feel that awful about herself. And so at that moment I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try. And it was a struggle. It was a struggle for me for a long time because I wasn't raised peacefully in any manner whatsoever. Mm. So and it was like every single day, it's like I had to try more and I had to try better. I had to be better. And where I am now compared to where I was years ago is drastically different. So, and I'm still growing. I'm still learning. I have my days where I'm just really just like, but now I know that I should just, you know, go into the bathroom and shut the door if I'm having too hard of a time with it. So I take myself out of the equation if I'm having too hard of a time with it. So.
Right. Yeah, I remember when my son was born in 2010, and he's crying at night, and I was thinking, I remember thinking like, let's just let him cry, you know, just let him cry, and eventually he's gonna stop crying. But and I think we I just tried that one time, and I'm like, no, this is not the right way. Like, like I could just, you could just feel that, no, this is wrong somehow for some reason. I don't know what, you know, but this is wrong. And, and it's very, you know, it's amazing because, we all grew up in different ways, but for the most part, most of us did not grow up peacefully. And the problem is that when we try to improve our parenting techniques, sometimes we get met with harsh criticism from our own parents. Because if you don't parent like your parents, then sometimes they may take offense to that and say, why are you doing differently? What did we do wrong? have you gotten that?
Not really. My mom, I think I've only had really one conversation with her about it where it was, like, out in the air. I mean, a lot of stuff in our family, we don't talk about a lot of stuff. But there was once when I had said something and it really offended her, and she went into some cognitive dissonance about the way she treated me when I was younger. And it was really upsetting for me at the time. It was about a year ago, actually, and she messaged me, and we had this Facebook messaging thing going on. But as far as her, like, talking to me about the way I parent my kids, no, she's never really – I've never really gotten anything from her that was indication that, you know, she was upset that I wasn't doing it the same way that she did. She respects me, I think, in what I try to do with my kids. So that's good. But, I mean, we've all grown a lot since I was – growing up, so she's not the same person that she was back then. Neither is my stepdad, who also raised me with her. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's one. I'm always battling with some people because, you know, I say, well, you know, I don't tell my parents constantly, you know, you abused me, you raised me wrong, you know, you were violent with me, because there's no end to that, and there's no way for that to be, you know, beneficial for anyone, right? It just engenders, you know, bad emotions. And so I'm like, all right, just forget about it. That was the past. You can't change the past. But now I can change my behavior. I can improve upon it. So that's what I'm focusing on. You know, forget about the past. It already happened. Right?
Yeah, I feel the same way. And, like, I also feel like the only way that I'm going to heal from what happened to me is just deal with it internally within me. And she has, like, she pretty much has nothing to do with the way that I'm healing from everything that went on when I was younger. So, I mean, we've talked about it. We've had the conversation. It's done. It's over with. So,
yeah. And then the same thing goes with, you know, homeschooling or unschooling, because I assume you went to government school as well.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Kindergarten to graduation. Yes.
Yeah, and the same thing. I get the same thing. You know, my you know, they know that we're not going anywhere near there, and and, you know, I'm always asking my son, my 5-year-old, whenever we see a school bus, and, you know, they're recognized very fast because they see, like, you know, in books and cartoons they see school buses and they know what it is, and even, you know, it's funny, my 3-year-old, she likes to joke that she goes to school, like, she likes to put on a backpack, put books on, and I'm like, Serena, what are you doing? She's like, I'm going to school. And I'm like, and I say, Serena, are you really going to school? And she's like, no, Daddy, I'm just joking. it's just for pretend. And I say, seriously, Serena, do you want to go to school? No. Okay, good.
Well, my daughter's opposite. My daughter, she wants to go to school. She's always talking about, she's like,
really?
She's like, Mommy, I really want to go to school. It looks so cool on
really?
TV and in movies. I'm like, honey, no. They don't show you anything what it's like on TV and in movies and stuff.
Okay, this is what I tell my kids. I say, because they asked me that question, like, why do kids go on the school bus? And, like, they go to school, and what do they do at school? All right, this is what they do. They sit down. You got to sit down. You got to be quiet. You got to write a lot of things. You got to listen to the teacher. You got to read a lot of things. And you can't go to the park, you can't go to the playground, you can't go to, you know, to museums, you can't go hiking, you can't...
that's what Ben was telling her. Ben was like, Bella, if you go to school, you have to sit in a desk and be quiet and you can't do anything. You have to sit there all day. And Bella, you can kind of see her. She's getting uncomfortable, like, squirming around in her seat, like, really thinking about it. Like, I don't want to do that. But, yeah, we've been telling her, but I thought maybe like a couple months ago I was thinking maybe I should let her try it, but then I was like, no, because no, that's not a good idea either.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, they do try to make it look fun, I think, especially in the beginning, like in kindergarten, right? It's all about playtime and nap time, and it's just a lot of fun, right? And then eventually, I guess, quickly in first grade, it becomes much more regimented and structured. And so, you really have to break that conditioning because, yeah, it's true. In so many cartoons that they watch for the kids, so much of it is school propaganda, how fun it is, you know.
It's so terrible.
it's just really amazing, and my kids they know they're homeschooled, and they tell people that, and the other thing my kids are is they don't recognize authority, which is awesome, but it's awesome for me, but not for my parents and my grandparents. They don't think it's necessarily.
My daughter's the same way. She won't. My four-year-old. She won't let anybody tell her what to do. If anybody tries to infringe on her rights that she feels she has, it's over for them. Like she will scream and kick until she has her what she feels is her rights back. So, yeah.
My especially my daughter. She's a little tinier, I think, than most 3-year-olds, and she's gonna be 4 in August, but. But she definitely makes up for that in voice, in like strength of voice or lungs, and in just her intense personality. Like, she's not afraid to try to bite somebody or push bigger boys or just when she's angry, like, oh my God, you got to be scared. And so I'm not afraid of her. I'm not afraid for her, for people in the future, you know. Like, some people are like, oh no, it's my daughter, she's very gentle and sensitive. No, that's not my daughter. And so she's I'm not like Jeremy, I don't know, from the Seeds of Liberty, he's got 4-year-old twins, and I was with him one time, and he said, you know, I remember when they hit, I think one of them hit the other one, and then Jeremy said, we only hit in self-defense. That's what he said.
Right.
which is a good voluntarist concept. But the thing is, I don't think I need to emphasize to my daughter when to hit, because she already, like, she's got that part down, right? So I'm like, all right, don't bite.
Whenever my daughter and my son, whenever they get in a fight, we're always like, who started it? Like, what happened? We've got to figure out what happened so we can let them know, like, you had the right to do that, but you didn't have the right to do that back. But, like, they get into this thing where one will take something from the other, and then one of them will hit them, and then the other one will hit back into self-defense. And, like, sometimes we just let them figure it out. But if they're getting, like, really crazy, we have to step in. Usually we're pretty hands-off, generally, and then figure it out. But
One thing I love to do is if they were in the car and they want to hear a song, but they're conflicting as to which song they want to hear, and so you know one of them is going to end up crying, right? And so what I tell them is, I'm not going to put on anything. You two talk and figure it out. Compromise and decide. And so you know, my son turns to Serena, I want to do this. And Serena turns to Marcus, I want to do this. And then that's their discussion.
Yeah.
So I definitely try to encourage dialogue between them, you know. Or another thing, I don't know if you do this, but I found this kind of to be a pretty good technique is, you know, if one of them does something that's really bad, you know, and makes the other one cry, or they fall or something, and they get hurt and they cry, I say, if the person, let's say Marcus hit Serena or made her fall or something, or took something away and she's crying, and then I say, okay, now Serena, if there's something that Marcus really wants to do really, really bad, I say, okay, Serena, can Marcus do that? So I give her the power to determine when she feels better and allow him to have whatever he wants. Right. I don't know if that's a good strategy, but I found that to be pretty good, because I'm not the one solving the problem. She's solving the problem. You know what I mean? To me, that's symbolic of restitution. Like, he has to make amends. He has to say, I'm sorry. You know, he has to help her feel better so that she can say, okay, Marcus, you can do that now.
Right.
So what do you think about that? That's
definitely interesting. We had an incident yesterday where my son was playing on his little handheld Sega game, and Bella had asked him if she could do something on it, and he told her no, so she pushed him, and he fell into the window. It looked really bad from where I was sitting, and then Bella was like, she knew she had done something wrong, and I told her, go up to your room for a minute, I'll come up and talk to you in a second. And she ran up to her room, and I made sure that Jude was okay, and then I went up and talked to her, and I was like, we talked about it, we really talked it out, and I was like, you know, that really hurt him. And then she was like, but mommy, I just wanted to play the game, and he wouldn't let me play. And I was like, yeah, I know, that's really frustrating, but it's his game, it's his property, you can't hit him just because he's not giving you his property. And she's like, okay, mom. And then she basically was like, she had it in her, you could see the wheels were turning in her head, and she's like, well, what if I say sorry to him? You think he'll let me play his game? And I was like, you could try. And so she came downstairs, and she said sorry to him, and he was so mad. He was like, And she tried to give him a hug, and he was like, no, I don't want a hug. And so I told her, I was like, you have to respect his body. If he doesn't want a hug, you can't hug him, but... And then he was mad for a little bit, but then he let her play it after a while.
Actually, that reminds me of when Serena is in a really, really nice, fun mood. She just like hugs and kisses people. And then if she's doing that when Marcus is in a bad mood, he's like, no, Serena, I don't want to kiss. And then she kisses him anyway. And then he gets really mad and starts crying. And then, and then he's crying. He's like, Serena just kissed me. And I joke about that with my other homeschooling friend. I'm like, can you imagine a man, you know, complaining that woman kissed me? but that was a learning experience for Serena, because yeah. I had to give him the power, whatever she wanted. You know, can Serena do this, right? Because and the reason was, you know, I was explaining to her that like you said, it's his body, right? Yeah. And if he doesn't want something.
Right.
Then you can't, you know, you shouldn't do it, right? You got to respect the other person.
Yeah. Usually my son Jude, he's the one who's really lovey-dovey, and he's very, he's very kind-hearted and sensitive, and I have to tell him all the time, like, you got to back off. Like, not everybody, like, wants to be loved on like that, but... Especially with the baby, he'll like get up in the baby's face and like squish his cheeks and like try to kiss on him and everything.
Right.
It's so cute. But yeah,
awesome.
Him and my daughter, they're pretty much polar opposites when it comes to everything. She's loud and very intense and very everything that she feels to the full throttle. Like. She's mad or upset or angry or happy. It's all full throttle. Yeah. But my son, he's really kind-hearted and gentle, and he's a little rambunctious sometimes, but generally, only if his sister gets him wound up, he's rambunctious. But they're pretty much polar opposites.
Yeah, it sounds like my daughter's like, when she's happy, you know, she's singing at the top of her lungs.
Yeah.
Like, her lungs are really powerful for her age. I'm like, you got to tell her, okay, calm, lower, lower. Yeah. Oh yeah. So her thing is, she has extremes, polar opposites. Like, she can be really, really loud or really, really soft. My son is like, I don't know if you saw this SNL skit with Will Ferrell where he's It's called modulation disorder, where he can't alter the tone of his voice. He's got completely monotone the whole. That's my son.
That's so
it's like, you tell him to whisper. No, can't do it.
My son can't whisper either. That's so funny. If I ask him to whisper, it's like, it's still the same volume.
Right.
I'm like, okay, I give up. Just give up.
So tell me what approach with unschooling. So do you tell people that you do homeschooling, or do you say unschooling?
I prejudge people basically before I go and tell them that I unschool my kids. But
right.
If they seem like they're pretty natural minded, or if they seem like they're pretty laid back, or if they even homeschool themselves, I will tell them that we unschool. But generally, it's just I just tell people that we homeschool, and then.
Yeah,
usually
that's radical enough, right, most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, usually. But I haven't really gotten a lot of questions about it yet. But we went to get something to eat the other day, and it was in the middle of the day, and that day they had done a statewide, like, tornado siren test, mm-hmm. and the kids were asking what it was, and I was like, oh, look, this is the perfect opportunity. So I pulled up some videos on YouTube of tornadoes, and I showed them what they were, and then we did, like, a little educational video on what tornadoes are and explained the siren to them. We did, like, we went in the bathroom and tucked down. Because I wanted them to know, like, in case there was a tornado, that's what we would be doing.
Mm.
But we went to lunch, and one of the workers there had asked if they went to school, and my daughter's like, no, we homeschooled. And then my daughter was telling her all about what we learned today, and the lady that was working there, she seemed really interested in what we were doing, But yeah, we just take it on a day-to-day basis. I don't have anything planned out or anything. It just fly by the seat of our pants, I guess. We just take the day as it comes with everything.
Yeah, yeah. I also, I guess, gauge, like you said, because homeschooling is a radical term for most people anyway.
Yeah.
A very small minority will know what unschooling is. But I basically describe unschooling, you know, by saying homeschooling, you know, I just say, you know, child-led learning or passion-led learning or life-led learning. And, you know, you just figure out what the child's interested in and you help promote that and you help encourage them, right? And I say that, you know, that's what learning is. Learning is voluntary. You know, you can't force someone to learn, right? That's called indoctrination when you do that.
Right.
And so, you know, I say, you know, that's pretty much what it is. And eventually, after I talk to them and I get them a little more comfortable with the idea of homeschooling, oftentimes I like to send them the video. I don't know if you saw the video by Josie Wales, Josie the Outlaw, which is a prison by any other name.
It sounds familiar. I've probably seen it.
Oh, it's an awesome one. Basically comparing government schools with prisons and how similar they are. In so many ways, you know, the bell signifies movement, right? There's an authority, you know, there's an a very clear authority, and that you have to listen to and regurgitate information and obey orders, and you have a selected time where you can have free, you know, play, and then there's a an overwhelming desire for freedom. Oh, you got your cat back.
My cat is trying. Window, apparently.
freedom.
It's funny too because he is an inside outside cat. He can go come and go as he pleases.
Okay.
I don't know what he's doing.
I love to talk about it. And you know, I just mentioned the idea of homeschooling, and then some people who I've gotten really comfortable with already, you know, through talking to them, they already admit to me, yeah, you know, there's a lot of problems with public school. You know, I don't even have to say anything. A lot of people just admit that. And then the other thing is, a lot of people that are homeschoolers around where I live, a lot of them just don't like Common Core. Like, that's the reason they homeschool, because they don't like Common, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not the reason that I do it at all.
Yeah.
It's like telling people you're an anarchist, and they're like, yeah, I don't like Obama either.
Yeah.
You know, it's a similar thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like the idea, it's like, I'm not against Obama, I'm against the idea of a ruler, right? I'm not against Common Core, I'm against the idea of institutionalized indoctrination masquerading as education.
So
I think it's clear, it's important to make that clear distinction with most people, because you know, a lot of people, you know, don't really realize the difference between indoctrination and learning. You know, I wrote an article entitled Learning and Living Are Inseparable.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And it's so true. You know, you can't live without learning. You can't do
right,
it.
Exactly. Like, try to go one full day without learning anything, and it doesn't work. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's like if you didn't learn within these 12 years, and then 3 years or 4 years after that in college, then you have no hope in your life whatsoever to improve yourself, right?
Right.
That's the approach, and the other thing I say is that, you know, government schools are like, they're kind of like, they try to predict the future, right? So it's like saying, you know, a child goes to kindergarten and first grade, and they say, you need to learn all this stuff for the next, you know, 13 years, and this is what you're going to need to know in your life 13 years into the future. This is what you're going to need to know. And I'm like, how do you know what they're going to need to know in 13 years? Who knows that?
Right. It's so absurd. It's so absurd. I can't really remember, like, learning anything at school either. It's like, when I think about being in school, I remember being bored. I remember just, like, wondering when the day was going to be over and I could go home. I mean, I'm sure I learned something here and there, but the most of what I remember is just, like, the struggle of, like, homework and getting good grades, and then the parents' disappointment when you get bad grades. And
right.
My mom always told me that I was smart, and I, like, knew, like, she knew I was smart, but, like, I hate pressure. I hate the pressure of, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. And so I struggled really hard in school, and my mom was so frustrated because she was like, you're so smart. You're, like, so smart, but you're not doing what you need to do. And just always that struggle when I was in school.
It's funny when you say smart, because people are equating smart with the ability to memorize and regurgitate information.
Right.
And like Larkin Rose said, you know, basically in order to excel in a government school, you basically have to be like a tape recorder, you know, and press record at the perfect time, and then when the test comes, you're like, okay, play back, and then the teacher hears the right answer. Okay, good, you get a high grade, you get a 100, right?
Right. Right. I remember, that just reminded me. I remember around like fourth or fifth grade, we would have these multiplication table, and they would time you. And so whoever got it done the fastest, like, won like a piece of candy or something. I would always just sit there. I would be like, I am not playing this stupid game. I would get some, I would like do maybe like 10 of them and just be like, this is so stupid. I'd watch everybody. I remember like sitting there and watching everybody like, look at all these idiots. They're like racing to get it done. And it's like, it didn't mean anything to me. Like it meant nothing to me back then, but.
Yeah. The most valuable and interesting things I learned were, of course, learned outside of school, right? Like I got really into piano, and I, you know, I had teachers, and I learned that outside of school. I got really into chess, and I read a lot of books outside of school. Yeah. And I was really into philosophy, Eastern Western philosophy, outside of school. astronomy, you know, theoretical physics, cosmology, you know, alternative medicine, all this stuff outside of school.
Yeah.
It was basically like the time in the day that was completely wasted doing stuff that I hated and I would never pursue. And so, you know, the way I look at it, it's like one giant broken window fallacy, because it's like, if we didn't, you know, because one thing that like my parents often say to me is that, you know, how can you hate your schooling so much? Look where you are now. You see what you've become.
Right.
You're an acupuncturist, you're a herbalist, you know, you're a father, two kids, and, you know, wonderful kids, and look what, that's what public school gave to you.
No.
And my response is, no, actually, I was able to do all those stuff in spite of school, you know,
right.
I was able to overcome that hurdle of wasted time and wasted potential. Like, what could I have done, what could I have possibly achieved if all that time was not wasted and I could have studied what I actually wanted to study? What could where would I have been today? No, I you can't even tell.
right.
And the same, you know, you can say the same thing about government and taxation. You know, they're like, you know, look at the roads and the bridges and you know, the Statue of Liberty, and look at all these buildings, you know, the White House, isn't that wonderful? Look, we have all these buildings and towers, and isn't that great, you know, with all this tax money, you see? And my response is like, well, all that money was stolen from the people, you know, at gunpoint. So what novelties and inventions and, you know, where would the market be if the people's money was not stolen and they were able to spend it and invest it where they wanted to? Where could we have been today?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So it's one huge broken window fallacy, and I think it's so important to realize that, you know, that's what we do is, you know, we focus on the child, the individual, right? It's not about society. It's not about this is what's best for society. You know, this is what we need for a civilized society. You know, you need to have a broad understanding of general knowledge to be an upstanding citizen.
Right. Exactly.
And all this crap. So I really push back on that a lot. I've gotten to a lot of heated arguments with my family members on this stuff because, you know, they take it as an insult, as a personal insult by me not, you know, choosing not to send them to school. And, you know, we have cousins, you know, a cousin that's going to daycare and that's going to go to school and you know, I have family members that work in the school system. And so, yeah. So it's an interesting...
People always get so offended if they work within the school system. They're like, that's the only people I've dealt with that have gotten personally offended if I say I'm homeschooling or something like that. They're like, well, what makes you think that you can do better for them? And I'm just like, okay, I'm a pretty non-confrontational person generally, so I try not to get into it with people. If I read them and they're not receptive, then I pretty much wrap up that conversation quickly. But
yeah, that's an interesting argument too. You know, these people have a master's in education, right? They're experts. That's why they should teach your kids, right? What do you have? You know, are you licensed? Are you registered teacher? You know, what authority do you have to teach your kids anything, you know? And it's like, do I need to be an Iron Chef to cook dinner for my kids? Or do I need to be a NASCAR driver to drive them around to where they need to go? Right? What, do I have to be an expert in everything? Is that what you're saying? I can't be a parent without being an expert in everything? Like, it's such a stupid argument, you know? If they want to learn piano and I can't teach them piano, I'm going to find them somebody to teach them piano. Like, what's the problem?
I taught myself how to play piano, so if anybody ever tried to use that argument, I'd be like, I'm just going to let him sit at the piano and figure it out or something, because that's what I did. So.
Yeah, and so with me, my passions, two of my great passions were piano and chess, and I loved them so much. I practiced so much piano and so much chess, went to chess tournaments and, you know, and everything, and so I used to practice piano like... in high school, 1 hour before, I used to wake up like 4:30 in the morning, practice piano 1 hour in the morning, come back home from school 2 hours after school, like every single day, and I loved it, right? And so people look at that and they say, oh, so they assume, they're like, oh, okay, so I guess you're going to teach your kids piano and chess, right?
Yeah.
And I say, you know what I say? Of course not. I mean, it depends, right? If they're interested,
right. If they want to, of course. That's exactly what I would say. If they're interested in it, I will. But I'm not going to make them do it. Like, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine my daughter, me making her sit down at a piano and play. Like, no, like not formal teaching, anyways. I mean, she'd sit at a piano and play by herself, but no, like my mom even, like, she talks about when I was really little, before I was like 5 years old, my grandma had a piano and she said I would sit at the piano and play like these little songs and stuff. And my grandma was in the kitchen one time and she thought that I was my aunt, and my aunt had formal teaching playing.
Wow.
And I was like, I was under five and my grandma thought that I was my aunt playing the piano or
really?
Something.
So, yeah. That's cool.
But I remember just playing around when I was little on her piano.
That's how it always starts. That's how anything valuable that you do in your life, it starts with just just basic interest, just curiosity, you know, playing around with stuff. That's how you learn. That's how things begin. That's how things that are, have value and worth begin. And so basically the translation to that question, which is, you know, so you're going to teach your kids piano and chess, is the translation is, so you're going to force your kids to learn piano and chess.
right?
That's the translation, right? They make it a little bit nicer. You're going to teach them. No. So basically what I do is I just play piano like normal. You know, I practice on the weekends, and they hear me a lot, and you know, they're interested. They hear, and sometimes, and actually, my daughter, the younger one, the 3-year old, she's actually more interested. She sits down and she bangs away a little bit. So when she's banging away, I go over there and I sit down with her and I teach her some little things until she gets bored and gets up and walks away. Also, another thing is the chess. You know, I go to some chess meetings at my local library every 2 weeks. And out of my son and my daughter is more interested in the chess than my son, the 3-year-old. You know, can you imagine that?
That's cool.
Like, his thing is more the iPads and the videos and stuff like that, video games, that's what he loves, which is fine, you know? So she's more into that. And this is another interesting topic is video games. Because you mentioned your son with the Sega thing. Is that, you know, doing the peaceful parenting, you know, you have to be comfortable with allowing your children to pursue whatever it is they're interested in without us, the parents, imposing our prejudice, our bias of that particular hobby or interest, right? So if we don't like video games and they like video games, it's really hard to encourage that because you don't like video games yourself. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like every parent wants their kid to do, you know, let's say piano, chess, philosophy, or physics, or whatever. You know, you want your kid to be interested in that. But what if they're not interested in that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My daughter, she loves playing, like, makeup apps on the iPad. She'll, like, do makeover stuff, and she's always wanting to put on makeup. She loves makeup, and she loves costumes and getting dressed up and stuff like that. So I'm not really that big into makeup. I never really have been. I don't wear makeup on a regular basis or anything. So it was interesting for me. Like, at first I was like, oh no, what if her self-image is thwarted because she wears makeup all the time and stuff like that. But now I'm like, okay, I gotta trust this process. I gotta trust her and, like, let her do her thing. And she just loves it. I don't, other than that, that's just her passion is makeup and animals. Makeup and animals is what she loves. So
makeup, yeah. My daughter is more into the singing and the dancing. She's into ballet. That's her like number one passionate thing that she loves is ballet. She absolutely loves it. She performs for anybody, any like newcomers that come over our, you know, to visit. She performs. She runs upstairs. She wants to get her tutu and get dressed and then come downstairs and perform. She loves it.
So she's my daughter, she loves to dance too, but she doesn't really like being the center of attention with a lot of people. If it's one-on-one, she would do a little dance. But if there's a lot of people, that's not her style. But,
yeah.
I put her in a ballet class here in the town that we live in, and she went for five or six weeks, and she really enjoyed it. But I had this one conversation with the lady that owned the place that made me, I was like, okay, we're never coming back here. But she said something about how my daughter never stops talking, and I was like, yeah, she pretty much never stops talking. And then she said something about, she made a snarky comment about how when she's in school, she's not going to be allowed to do that. And I was like, well, it's a good thing. I was like, well, it's a good thing she'll never have to go through that. And then I never took her back to the dance class. So I'm going to have to find her somewhere else to go for that, but... I'm just like, I can't believe that somebody would. I don't know. People have the audacity to say stuff like.
The dance place that we go to, my daughter just absolutely loves it, and she's the one that's the most focused on what the teacher is saying, and she's like the most dancing with her heart, you know, dancing her heart out, because there's a little screen where we can see what the kids are doing. And most of the other girls are, like, you know, distracted with something else. My daughter's, like, really focused on what she's, you know, what the teacher's doing. So it's amazing. And also the other thing is most of the 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds that go there only go once a week. And then my daughter loves it so, so much that we're like, maybe we should go have her go twice a week, and she loves it twice a week. And then the teacher was like, I don't have one student that goes twice a week. Your daughter's the only one that wants to go, and she loves it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's the true test of most people doing peaceful parenting and unschooling is that what if your child likes to do something that you don't like?
Right.
That's the true test, right? If they like something that you like, that's easy, you know. But what if they like something that you don't like? Not that you know nothing about, but that you actually do not like.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Ben doesn't really. Bella will ask Ben if he'll sit with her and do the makeup games, and he's just like, "Yeah, I really don't want to do that right now." It's so funny. But sometimes he'll play. Like, she has these Monster High. Have you seen those dolls? They're like
no.
They're like green and blue, and they have all this crazy makeup on. They're like Barbies, but they're kind of like goth. Like,
wow.
They're monsters.
Okay.
So, but she has those, and she'll drag Ben into playing with her sometimes. It's so funny.
So she doesn't play with what's his name, Jude, the middle
Jude?
One.
Oh, my son. Yeah, they play all the time. Yeah, they're always playing with each other.
Or are they? But does she do the makeup with him?
Yeah, he loves to wear makeup too. Like, sometimes when she tries to put him on it, he's like, "Yeah, I'll do it." Like, he's pretty go with the wind. He doesn't really mind. So.
That's awesome. That's the other thing that I don't really, I'm not really stressing about is, like, you know, gender roles. Like, you know, boys wear this, boys do this, and girls do this. You know,
yeah.
like my daughter, she loved, you know, she went through a period where all she wanted to wear was tutus all the time. Tutus. That doesn't matter if she was in ballet class or not. Everything was tutus. And then my son was like, you know, I want to try that. And so, and so he wore. I mean, I didn't say anything. He wore it for a little bit. And he's like, nah, it's not for me.
Yeah, my son did the same thing. He was like, well, that looks cool. She had an Elsa dress from Frozen, and
right.
He wanted to wear it. And he wore it for maybe about 2 minutes, and he was like, nope, and he took it off. It was funny, though. I just let him do it.
Yeah, it's about tolerance. And that's the thing, is like, you know, when I describe how I parent, I say that I don't act like an authority figure. I don't act like a superior, right? I act like an equal. I act like a friend, like a peer, and if anything, if any kind of power differential, I want to be like an advisor, you know, that
right.
They would come to for advice because they trust you, right? Because that they wouldn't want to hold secrets from you because they know that, you know, you'll be there to listen. You're not going to get angry at them, and that's my goal, right? And so it's so hard, you know, going back to how we were parented, you know, with a lot of emotions and anger and corporal punishment. And it's so easy to fall back into that, and I find myself doing that too. Like, you know, we're imperfect human beings, and, you know, we get angry at things, and I just have to, like, remind myself to calm down. It's not, you know, it's not that important. So,
right. Even if I make the mistake of, like, slipping back into old habits or something, and if we're having a bad day, or if I yell at them, I always feel bad enough to where I'll apologize, and I'm like, "Mommy, sorry, I'm having a rough day," or I'll be honest with them. I'll tell them if I'm having a bad day, or if I'm sorry that I yelled at you for that. I know that you were just trying to do, like, whatever they were doing, and. So I feel like it teaches them that we make mistakes and that they don't have to be perfect. So.
Yeah, and like, when we go over to my mother-in-law's house, she's Hungarian. She grew up in communist Romania, so very authoritarian environment. And so she, one thing that she says to us is very frequently when we go over there is that you're the authority figure in the house. You tell them what to do. You know, you're in control. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. that's not the way we parent, you know. And that bothers her. It's like, you know, that's her mindset. Like, somebody needs to be in control in this situation, you know. And I mean, sure, like, you know, people take it to the extreme. Like, you're gonna let your kids run in the street? No, of course not. you make sure they don't die. Okay, that's the first thing about parenting. Make sure they don't die. Okay. And the second thing is, you know, you have to be, the way I look at it, you know, be as tolerant as possible. Allow them to be free and, you know, without restriction as much as possible, within reason, whatever you think that is, within reason, right? And so as little as possible, I try to, I don't like to assert my authority at all. Like, because, you know, as parents, we are already bigger, stronger, and older, right? So we already have that authority. We don't need to assert it anymore. Like, it's not necessary. It's overkill.
Right. I feel like people that have to assert their authority don't, like, they don't actually have any. Like, I don't know if that's true or not, but, like, I feel like the people I see who are, like, just, like, laying the hammer down, they're really not in any control at all. They're just, you know, just demanding and expecting, really. Expectation is what it boils down to. They're just expecting too much from their kids if they're demanding and
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, like, you know, like the bully in school who likes to bully everybody around, really, he has a deep insecurity in himself. Maybe he was beaten as a child or in his house or has a broken household or, you know, or let's say, like, somebody's a homophobe and they say they hate homosexuals. They're probably homosexual themselves. Right? So.
Right. It's really, really adamant about. You know, something that it usually puts up a red flag for me where I'm like, okay, something's off right there. And I either choose to, like, leave it alone or sometimes I'll expand on it or try to get to the bottom of it in conversation. But
yeah. Well, excellent conversation. I don't want to keep it too long. I see your child needs you. So, so before we go, please, you know, plug your sites again. Let people know where they can find you.
Okay, we have a page called Strictly Voluntary, and it's a good place for voluntarists. And my boyfriend Ben, he posts a lot of good content on there about voluntarism and freedom. And then we have the Unsocialized Autonomous Brats, UAB we call it for short, but it's our unschooling and peaceful parenting page. Ben posts a lot of content on that. I usually, if I post something on there, it's usually like a personal story about our own family. And then I have Agorist Girl, which I just vamped up a couple weeks ago, and I'm really getting into posting more on that page, and it's all about agorism and the free market. So
Excellent. So, one thing I like to ask all my guests before we go is, what's your favorite quote of all time?
I really like the "Do no harm, but take no shit." I love that. Do no harm, but take no shit either. So,
excellent. Excellent. I love it. basically, Yeah. Live in a principled way, and
right.
And also, you know, the importance of self defense, right? That,
right.
You know,
exactly.
It's like I think I saw, I was checking out, what's it, your website or one of your pages, I was checking out, and there was a picture of guns, and it says I don't own assault weapons, I only own defense weapons.
Oh, that might have been our page. I don't know.
I saw that. I thought that was pretty good. It's just about self ownership, and I mean the principles that we talk about with volunteerism are very simple principles that people don't seem to realize how profound they are and how, you know, they can really change your worldview.
We got into it a few days ago with somebody on Facebook. I had posted something about Bernie, and somebody got really rustled about it. And I was like, look, man, I just want everybody to be free. I don't know what your problem is. He was saying that we were holier than thou or something with our attitudes about freedom. And I'm like, well, I mean, we just want everybody to be free. I don't understand why it's so hard for people to understand. And it's like, it's not like a club where we're not letting some certain people in. Like, we just want you to be, we want people to be free to do what they want to do without the threat of coercion and violence. Like, if you're going to be violent, then yeah, we don't want you in our little community, but we take that, everybody takes that, you know, individually.
And he's like, can't you understand, in order to reach utopia we need to rob the rich, that's the way to go.
Right. Right.
Just right. A little bit more taxes, and we will reach utopia.
Yeah. Well, he was going off the notion that people and humans are inherently violent.
Right.
So
yeah.
At anarchy, it would just be complete chaos.
Right.
That's just people's mind control, I guess.
Yeah, it's all about fear.
They're scared. They're just scared. It's like,
yeah.
Once you can let go of the fear, then you can go really far in your life.
Yeah,
you let go of
fear. Exactly. It's like
parenting or anywhere in your life, if you let go of that fear.
Fear? Oh, yeah. Fear is paralyzing, and fear is the foundation of statism. It's the foundation of nationalism and hatred of other, countries, nationalities, ethnicities, religions, creeds, genders, you know. It's just amazing how paralyzing fear can be, and statism just promotes that, you know, we should tax them because they're robbing you. We should impose these tariffs, build these walls.
Right.
You know, separate, divide people. That's the whole idea. And you know, the other thing is you know, if we're all violent, like, again, how can you put violent? If we're all violent, how are putting some violent people in control of everybody going to solve
right,
the problem?
Right.
So, yeah, it just falls on its face. But awesome conversation, Skylar. Really appreciate it. So if anybody wants to help me out, you can do so through Bitcoin, PayPal, or Patreon. The links are below. It's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. Dollar show is fine, or dollar a month, whatever you can afford, whatever you think this show is worth to you. If you feel you receive value from watching the show, please donate. You know, that's the only democracy I support is voting with your dollars. I think that's the only moral democracy that we can support without any coercion whatsoever, right? Vote with your dollars. If you want to see something more of in the world, you patronize it. So awesome conversation, Skylar. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much. So this
Thank
is
you.
No problem. So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.